The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. With Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
We're still fooling with our sound here.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear some? Can you hear?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mic check.
Yeah, it wasn't the mic check.
It was the headphones.
It was the headphone check. It's either too loud or too soft, you know? We're like Goldilocks. All righty. So, happy Mother's Day. For those of you listening on Mother's Day, we air Sundays here at KCNR Studios in Northern California, up in Redding. From noon to 2. That would be Pacific time for those of you that are detail-oriented. And we have a chat room. What?
For those of you on the West Coast that actually want to catch us on time.
Well, which is hard enough for us to do. I don't expect other people to do it.
Yeah, really.
No, it was kind of funny. I told somebody, we're in California, so it's noon to 2. And they go, is that Pacific time?
Crap. No.
Yes, it's Pacific time, you goofball. No,
it's Alaska time.
And then you can always catch us commercial-free on the East Coast. They re-air our program on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network that comes out on WNJC in Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore. That is Saturdays from 2:30 to 4. So they chop out all the commercials and they stuff the whole show into an hour and a half, which is kind of fun. Then you also have the option of a phone number. So if you have people who want to listen to the program but don't have computer access that is fast enough to stream audio, they can always listen on the phone, 832-999-1199. And that is provided by the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. So all of their programming streams in a big giant loop. So that phone number always has conservative programming happening. So if you have 3 minutes or, you know, you got a speakerphone in your vehicle, something like that, and you'd like to listen, it is 832-999-1199. Our webpage is wethepeopleradio.us. There you can get phone numbers for us. You can, you can do all sorts of stuff. You could follow programming back to, geez Louise, I don't know, 2010 or something.
1847.
Don't you have a little song? Isn't there a little song you could sing for us? yeah, what is that one you always sing me?
The war had just begun. Oh, I forgot the 1941.
Oh my gosh, you're usually really good on that.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All I know is it's a little song. I don't really know which one it is. So
just
let's
like sing the Bismarck?
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know where that came
you and
from.
Bob deserve each other.
Johnny Horton.
Yeah. Hey,
Johnny
you guys
Horton.
Gave me the wrong information. I updated the website to have the right link. You guys told me it was the 8th.
It is the 8th.
But it doesn't come up the 8th.
No,
it's not coming up properly. So those of you online, just click the button for next week. You'll
Our
get the right
will
show.
We'll have to call back. We have to have next week's guest on again.
We'll have to wait a week.
Yeah. Stand by.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing's easy, you know, especially when you get back late at night. Sorry. I was very tardy this morning coming back from visiting my mom. But that was good. Let's see.
Okay, well, now when you click on next week, you get May 15th, so that would be correct.
For Lord's sake, what is happening?
Well, we don't really care.
I don't know.
Point.
Something funky's going on, but I'll fix it. It'll get sorted out. So we have Ambassador Francis Rooney with us. He was U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, a.k.a. the Vatican, from 2005 to 2008. He was appointed by President George W. Bush and is the author of a book called The Global Vatican, which provides an inside look at the Catholic Church, world politics, and the extraordinary relationship between the U.S. and the Holy See. We have had the ambassador on before. We always get really good updates on what's going on out in the big world. Since
we great information.
Since we spend loads of time looking myopically at, land use issues and other odd things. So it's kind of nice to broaden our scope. And kind of fired up you were able to join us on Mother's Day. Hi, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you for having me on. It's a treat to be on your show. And
well, it's usually fun anyway.
Compliment.
We pay all our guests in fun.
You never know what you're going to get.
That's our currency. It's goofing
off. Land use issues are important.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, there's no shortage if you live out here in the West. So we try really hard to educate our urban brethren, as a constituent phoned me last week and informed me that he was tired of being controlled by the city-its. So apparently those were idiots who live in the city. So no slight on the city-its, but yes, we should educate everybody on what's going on. Because, you know, people, I don't know if people really realize how much their private property is tied, their private property rights are tied to what's happening in some of our public lands, besides the fact that they're paying for it, which should alarm them. So what's going on in your world?
Well, I've been enjoying the reaction to the fact that Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee.
And that has been a fun little ride, hasn't it?
It's very interesting to watch people taking different positions, some of which make some sense and some of which I just don't understand at all. And, you know, it's almost like denial of reality.
Yeah, there's lots of that going on, isn't there?
Well, no, the last time you know, when you were involved in the Bush era, the public wasn't quite as engaged as they are now.
Well, I think social media's had a lot to do with that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And then I think people felt a little bit like things were out of control, and, you know, you had movements like the Tea Party and whatnot that kind of brought people out of their, you know, out of their work. And then the economy melted down, so we all had more time.
You know, one thing that's frustrating me a lot is, grant you, Mr. Trump's language is brutish and unnuanced and overly broad. But if you go beyond the language and you think, okay, what's the concept the guy's exploiting here? What concept is he trying to pursue? And what's motivating the people that are behind him? There's not that much difference between what Donald Trump is supporting in a general sense and what I worked on with Jeb Bush, okay? Things that are important to fix the problems that we face in this country, the problems that wage earners face, that we face from a tax point of view and an investment point of view, that we face from the point of view of capital that's abroad that needs to come back here.
Yeah, was that a problem that you guys were looking at before?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Trump's tax plan, according to the New York Post, is what I read of the details of it, is not a whole lot different than what Jeb proposed. He proposed a very interesting thing, and Trump and Jeb were the only two people that did it, where they said just deduct all capital expenditures in the year that you make them. You don't have to have this 5-year, 10-year depreciation. Just you make a capital expenditure, you just deduct it, and you have your net operating loss carried forward. And what it does, it stimulates investment in property, plant, and equipment. They do that in Mexico, and it works very well. So, I mean, and then he talked about reducing the corporate tax rates. Jeb did not have as low of rates as Trump. Trump's rates are maybe a little too low, create too big a deficit. And both of them come out, they say, let's offer some kind of one-time tax payment of a lower amount to entice the multinationals to bring their money back home. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. And who complains about that?
Well, I guess Paul Ryan.
You know, it's what's your
gotta
take
have somebody,
on,
don't you?
What's your take on the GOP's lack of interest in Trump? I mean, he just
according
seems,
to the media.
Well,
yeah
I don't know. Is
it's
it
not
according
everybody?
To the media, it just seems like they're very concerned about him taking the leadership role. Why? What do you think?
Well, I think. From the perspective of Paul Ryan and sitting members of the Congress, there's a strong element of give us some window, some language that we can use to go out to our right-wing districts, of which there are way too many that aren't contested enough, and so that we don't get attacked from the right. So I think part of Paul Ryan's motive is to say, I'm not for Trump yet, and let's see what he does to give some cover to people running in districts that they don't want to see some guy come at them from the right. And that happens a lot in the Republican Party right now.
Hmm. Yeah, and okay, so because you're in Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you dealt with Did you, were you there when Jeb Bush was a governor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you were involved, I was just guessing by what you said earlier, you were involved a little bit with his presidential campaign?
Deeply.
Deeply involved with his presidential campaign. Yeah. Okay, so
and
these...
I think he would have made a fantastic president because he has the sentiments of Donald Trump without the unnuanced language.
Well, that's what I was going to say. From a personality standpoint, you couldn't split it any harder. You know, just...
No, they're totally different people.
So what else did they have in common, just out of curiosity?
I don't think they have anything in common other than...
No, I meant like policy-wise.
Oh, policy-wise? Well, look, Trump says we have to deal with the impact of globalization and technological change, the anger and frustration that many middle-class and wage-earning people in the country feel about stagnant wages and maybe not enough good jobs. Jeb has plans for that. And their plans are tactile and detailed. And they involve things like job training. They involve things like tax incentives for companies that like to come back here and not go to Mexico or go to Singapore and things like that. I think that if Trump would read what Jeb wrote, it would be very much in sync with some of the broad concepts that he's elaborated.
That's such a funny idea, and I think most people would find
think
that.
Think about two other things. Two other things come to mind are welfare. Welfare, before Gingrich and Clinton struck the workfare deal, welfare had no requirement about work. They created something in the mid-90s called workfare. Well, that's all been undercut and eliminated now, okay? So one thing, we need to put the workfare back in welfare. Not a rocket science idea. We're not inventing some kind of new metal. We're just saying if people are going to get benefits, they ought to be looking for work.
I think I've heard that from a lot of folks that, you know, they're on public assistance, but they don't have to do anything or even appear to do anything to earn it. It's just free money.
I think that has something to do with this labor force participation rate.
Oh, yeah, that inconvenient thing that keeps messing up how many people are unemployed.
Right. If you're getting $30,000 a year from the government, then you don't need to participate in the labor force. You know, food stamps are like four times as many people are using food stamps right now as were when President Obama took office. Now, I don't think the economics of the recession and the recovery justify that.
No, it was interesting. I was speaking with a lady yesterday whose son is 50, so he's a grown-up, had same job for, I don't know, 13, 14 years, and then did something stupid and got himself fired. And was on unemployment for, I think she said, 2.5 years. And she just was so bugged because she, you know, she said, what are you going to do? Your resume is going to have a 2.5 year gap. They're going to think you're in prison. Yeah, you know, you can't just sit around and collect.
I typically look for the 5 year.
Yeah, five years.
Five-year gap.
Kind of a hot tip. But yeah, you know, he wasn't even trying. He was making enough money to pay what bills he had. And he had all his time free, so he was taking it as a giant life break.
Yeah, and you know, the liberal media always wants to portray this as a racial divide, and it's not at all, okay?
No.
As Charles Murray's written in his book, Coming Apart, it has nothing to do with race, gender, creed, color, nothing. It has to do with government benefits being set at a level of accessibility and dollars that... For people that are kind of on the edge, they just say, well, why bother? Go work. And we have to stop that.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's close, they're going to take the free money. It's just amazing. I mean, I spent 3 years trying to hire somebody for a position at our place of business, and I can't tell you how many times I heard, I make more than that on unemployment, or I make more than that on public aid. I get free medical. I get free this, free that. And when he adds it all up, he's making 20, 25 bucks an hour. And they won't even look at a job if it doesn't start for at least that. There's a problem there.
There is. I mean, look at all the yards that get cut, dishes that get washed, and feedlots and butchers and things that are basically populated by illegal aliens or newly immigrant Hispanics. because a lot of Americans don't want to do that work.
No. No, and they come here and they look at jobs like that and go, holy cow, that's more money than I've made for forever in my country. I'll gladly take that job. And they work hard. They do a good job. And a lot of times they end up moving up into something better. But so many folks that were raised here, I don't want to say they're spoiled, but
they're spoiled.
They're spoiled.
Yeah, I want $15 an hour for,
I'm worth it.
Doing some entry level.
Yeah, I have a college degree and I need $25 an hour to pay for that degree. Well, you don't start there. And I think that's the big problem with our society today is we have taught our children, you know, you go to school and get an education and you're going to get a good job and you're going to start at the top. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I remember one time my wife and I, Kathleen, were having dinner with Thomas Sowell, the brilliant black economist.
Yeah.
And he said, we have raised a generation of children to think they're the best, and unfortunately they do.
Yes. Isn't that true? They walk into an interview, and the first thing out of their mouth is, what's the benefits? That's the wrong question.
They're starting to call it the everybody gets a ribbon at the swim meet mentality.
Everybody gets a trophy.
But they forgot to learn how to swim.
I've got a fun story about that. But we have to take a really quick break. Otherwise, the whole hour will be behind yet again, which is kind of a hallmark of this program. We start late, finish late, all that. We are chatting with former Ambassador Francis Rooney. He's always going to be Ambassador Rooney to us. The former thing's just annoying. He was ambassador to the Vatican. Very interesting. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have all sorts of great information and links to his book, The Global Vatican. We'll be right back. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them? Shift work, hard work, tired body, a blue collar shirt and a baseball cap, union made. He's hot, sweat drops round the clock. The door never locks and the noise never stops. Night or day, working 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. Yeah, I worked all those shifts. I kind of like shift work. It was fun. Late at night, everybody had to be up because you were working. Shift
nights for sleeping.
Nights for driving all night. That's what it was last night. So, Ambassador, I had a friend whose dad, or, you know, husband, the kids' dad just hated that everybody gets a trophy thing. So they're on their way back from some soccer thing, and kids are in the back seat, and I don't know, they're like 8, 9, 10, something like that. And the dad's like, oh, you got a trophy. He just went to pick them up. Oh, you got a trophy. Great. Did you guys win? No. No, we lost. Everybody got a trophy. He goes, oh, let me see that trophy. Rolls the window down and heaves the trophy out the window.
Wow.
The kid starts crying. He goes, a trophy wasn't worth anything. Wait till you win. That's a trophy worth saving.
But she agreed with it. The kid kind of came around.
Well, after a while, it was kind of like, hey, you're kind of right. Everybody did get the same one. What was great about winning, you know? But I kind of laughed. As a country, we kind of need to roll the window down and, you know, throw the trophy out the window. It's time.
On the one hand, Thomas Hobbes said, life is nasty, brutish, and short. On the other hand, we have the happy song. We're somewhere in the middle of the United States right now, but skewed towards the happy song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then reality hits, and all of a sudden, all our kids are in therapy.
Well, then you have to have a safe space.
Because now we have microaggression. It impedes their ability to make critical judgments that are important for the future of our country and for them and their kids.
Oh, absolutely. Then they never had to make a choice. That really mattered. That really affected anything that they did in the future. I mean, when we grew up, you made choices, right or wrong. You made the choice. and some of them didn't really get the result you were looking for.
No, and I remember my father pointing out that it was my choice that got me there. I remember we had long talks about that.
Yeah.
How if I would have made different choices, different things would have happened. And, I'm not sure how much of that is actually happening. You know, I was having a little discussion with somebody on our chat room at the same time we're doing all this. And, you know, I was told, I wasn't involved in the federal policy stuff back during the Bush era, but I was told that back during that time, Congress defunded a bunch of things, kind of rolled back some of the control of the agencies and things like that, and starved it for money, which stopped a lot of the bad things that were happening during the Clinton era. The problem was they didn't actually change the law. So as soon as Obama came in, added money right back to it, and as soon as it was funded, poof, all the bad policies were back up and running. Do you have any, you know, have you seen any of that? You know, did you see any of that when you were there?
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, the Bush administration had an agenda, and it was a good agenda that was the kind of agenda that will build a stronger America for the long run. But it's a lot easier to roll back executive orders and then just not fund and not execute programs than it is to go back to Congress and say, eliminate this, eliminate that. That would have been the hard blocking and tackling, which would have been better because it would have institutionalized the change instead of create a short-term 8-year window. Now we're back right where we are. And I think that's a big problem with government generally, that everybody up there, these career politicians, are acting in terms of their own narrow interest and taking the easy way out. And no one wants to confront the fundamental long-term needs of the country. No wonder Trump's Trump.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, in the back of people's minds, they're hoping, you know, you're fired is something that we start hearing a lot. You know, all joking aside about the reality show, obviously the guy's not afraid to fire people, and the government has become, you know, the executive branch has become insanely bloated.
Yeah, and George W. had plenty of time during the administration when he had the Congress as well. He could have just cobbed all that junk out. But you get this insidious stuff, okay? Even Republicans, they'll say, oh, we don't want to do that. That'll hurt us here or hurt us there, and all the back-scratching things. And one good example of it is the Ex-Im Bank.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with renewing the stupid Ex-Im Bank, okay?
Yes.
Most of the money that the Ex-Im Bank lends goes to Boeing and their sub-assembly suppliers. I would much rather say, we'll protect Boeing. We'll put a surcharge on any Airbus product or whatever that comes into this country. But it's much better to target the cost to the specific people like Airbus than make all of America pay for that.
Yeah. Because I don't think most people understand what Ex-Im Bank does or is. And so when the fight comes up, I don't think people weigh in, really.
And I think there's an element of what Trump's saying in this, that, okay, let's say, okay, Boeing says, I can't sell jets in Europe without Ex-Im Bank subsidized interest. We say, oh, yes, you can. We're just going to put a little tariff or some other kinds of limitations on what Airbus can do to make sure the playing field's leveled if Europe offers a competing subsidy. So then you go to the European people and say, don't offer a subsidy or we're going to go after you. So then the whole competitive field becomes laid back to normal competition without subsidies on either side.
And so what do you see, happening in the, you know, in a Trump, administration?
I think there's some elements of what the guy's saying that could work that way. You know, subsidies and tariffs become a beggar than neighbor deal. You know, I do one, you do one, all that. And the better way is to sit back and say, free competition, we won't give subsidized rates for Boeing, you don't give subsidized rates for Airbus. If you do, we're going to put a tariff on you. But if you don't, we won't. Everybody plays on an equal field. Boeing doesn't get American corporate welfare. Airbus doesn't get European corporate welfare. Then people like you and I don't have to pay for Boeing to compete with Airbus, which I really is not my fight.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't –
Well, that's so true with so many corporations.
Yeah, at some point, we have to stop paying for all of it.
Exactly. You got to stand on your own 2 feet. I mean, that's the way it's always been until the government stepped in and decided to start picking winners and losers.
Yeah, but, you know, Boeing comes in to these congressmen who don't know anything, they've never had a job, they've never made a payroll, and say, oh, it's going to cost jobs in your district. And the congressman's got the best job he's ever had in his life and says, oh, my gosh, jobs in my district. Yes, I'm for the Ex-Im Bank. Instead of saying, no, Boeing, we're going to craft a better program. We're not going to make all of America subsidize you. We're going to go after the people that are grieving you, that are bothering you unfairly. Yeah. And that happens all through the government. Boeing's just an example.
Yeah, and it didn't, if I remember right, it didn't pass in the House, and it looked like it was dead, and then I think the Senate revived it again.
Yeah, and then the House caved.
And then, a bunch of people in the House caved in. Brutal. Majorities are only as good as
well. I think if Trump gets in there, all eyes of the world will be watching what Congress does to support what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, true.
And it's then we'll see who's going to stay in office and who isn't, because I think people are really tuned in right now and they want to see the change, a lot of the change that he's talking about. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that can't stand the guy, but you know, his core message, I think, is something that resonates with the majority of people. I mean, when they say, oh, he hasn't got a chance against Hillary, I disagree with that. I think people are going to be surprised. I really do.
Well, first, I think we're going to see him become a little more nuanced in some of his statements.
Oh, he can do that
now. If he were more nuanced, going back to what we talked about earlier, if he were more nuanced, he wouldn't be that much different than Jeb Bush. He just has a delivery that excites people in a different manner than Jeb did.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well,
we're starting to see him tone it down a little bit already.
But, sure. Yeah. Well, when the left starts calling you a racist, a bigot, and a hater, you know you're on the right track.
Right. But he has no fuse for that stuff. I mean, if they attack him, his first instinct is to attack back. There's no diplomacy there.
You know, see, one thing that I keep thinking about so much, and I shouldn't, but it really keeps me up at night. Our country was founded by people who didn't need the job, didn't want the job, and gave their entire fortune to create the country. None of those three conditions apply to most of the elected officials that we have right now.
Right. And look at how much it's cost him to run this campaign. His own money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he's the closest thing to one of those founding fathers we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
It's really hard because you have, I mean, if you think about it, we've got 535 people in there, and how many do we hear from on a regular basis? Six?
Right.
Yeah. Not very many.
Seven.
Not
and so many. They become everyone.
Which is another thing. I think we need a national referendum on term limits. This country was never thought about as a place with a political elite that would be in office for a long time. In fact, we fought a war to fight against people that were just like that. But now we've got it ourselves.
Yeah, except people keep electing them. I mean, they have the option. Geez, in the House, they have a shot at them every 2 years.
They have the option, and there may be other ways to create more impediments to that, but I'd like to see term limits. I think they should know when they go in. It's a temporary job. You're here to serve the people. It's not about you, and you're going to do it for 5-10 years, and you're going to let someone else try it.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we do that, the other thing, because what we see in California is we have term limits out here, and the backlash of that is that the bureaucrats run the state. Because the legislators are all too new. They don't have enough history.
Well, they don't know how the system works.
So
they think they have the basics, but they don't know the ins and outs of how the whole system works. And by the time they get their finger on it and figure out what's going on, they're out. And
so a lot of the new
bureaucrats
guys
are in there.
Yeah, they're in for 30 years.
For decades.
Yeah. So a lot of the new guys go.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go to committee or whatever. And who's running the I was speaking with a one of our state senators at this I don't know, some event or something, and he represents just south of us. But he was on the Board of Prison Terms for like 15 years, and prior to that he was a senator. So because of the term limit rules, blah, 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 he was able to run again. So he's been around the California State Capitol for a long time. Conservative guy, smart guy, really hard worker. And we had this conversation about term limits. And he said, he was livid just about what was going on down there. He said, I go to committee meetings and the staff of the committee and the bureaucrats from the agencies are running these meetings because the legislators don't have enough information because they just got there. Because I'm the only one who's got really any institutional knowledge in any of these committees. And these guys have no idea how these guys are running them around by the nose.
Well, like, there's two points I would say. First of all, you need smarter people running for office.
Well, there's
that aren't going to get ballyhooed and kowtow to some bureaucrat.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The other thing is the bureaucrats need to know that they are in a precarious living environment, that they don't have such civil service protection. Because they work for the elected officials who represent the people.
Yeah. See, and,
They're all union, though, well, so you got to be careful there.
They work for the executive
branch. That's a problem. It's ridiculous.
It's a huge problem.
So you're saying that the bureaucracy has basically more, they have all this stability in their work environment.
Big time.
Where they can take huge risks in confronting their elected bosses.
Yep. Well, I'll give you a great example at the federal level. An amendment went in. From our congressman here to an appropriations for the Army Corps of Engineers. Everybody bitches about how the laws are too long, too big, you got to be an attorney. He's a farmer. It was a one-sentence amendment. It said that the Army Corps of Engineers was not allowed to expend resources, money, time, et cetera, to regulate farming because somehow the Army Corps of Engineers thinks they're in charge of farming now. So here's a one-sentence amendment. Passes through appropriations, and they're still all over the farmers here in Northern California. So they call the Army Corps in, sit them down, and said, hey, look, guys, here's the one-sentence amendment that's been signed by the president. You are not allowed to regulate farming. You want to know what they said? That's not the way we read that. That's not the way we read that.
And that's the tyranny of the bureaucracy.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, because the only person to rein them in is the executive branch. The legislature doesn't get to make the laws and carry them out.
That's true. And the executive branch that doesn't want to enforce the laws.
Exactly.
Is a bad deal. So we've had Richard Nixon that didn't want to do that, and we have Barack Obama that didn't want to do that.
Well, yeah. Obama's taking it to a whole new level, though.
Because the attorney, the attorney general's like, what broken law? We better take a – speaking of laws, we better take a quick break. I felt Bob being despondent over there. He's like, God, she's doing it again. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here speaking with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He has written a terrific book called The Global Vatican. You can find all that information online. See you in 2 minutes. Exactly. Why can't we just all get along?
Why can't we all just get along?
That's my mom. I went down to visit her yesterday, and my uncle was there. He's kind of a right winger. Kind of a right winger. And so my mom said, all right, I have to go get my hair cut. When I come back in an hour, we're not talking about any more politics. You get it out of your system right now. How's that for...
She threw down on you.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. She apparently they talked about Hillary the day before, and my uncle clued her into all the crimes Hillary's been committing, and my mom got a terrible stomach ache, and they had to stop talking about it.
Her idol.
I love her. No, she doesn't even like Hillary, but she really hates Mr. Trump. What do you think about that, Ambassador? The people who maybe would have crossed over if we had somebody who maybe wasn't a flamethrower?
I think the analogy is like when you go to the ophthalmologist. Better this way, better this way.
Is it one or
I think
two?
If you do that a couple of times, you get clearer vision.
That's a good theory, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. Either that or it's not happening fast enough. Because we just keep slipping down the rabbit hole further and further and further. And these agencies are just wiping us out.
Yeah, but Bernie's drawing a crowd. What's up with that?
Well, I
think he's tapping some things on the left wing side and some of the younger people that Trump's tapping from more of the working people. There's a lot of uncertainty and frustration out there about different things. I'm more worried about these young people not understanding about free enterprise and capitalism and being so quick to flock onto this clown than anything in the whole world. I mean, they were raised in an era of good times. Everybody's been getting these ribbons for a long time, and they have no clue about how that bread gets made.
No, you're right. But, you know, I did hear kind of an interesting statistic the other day that the people that Bernie is attracting is the younger crowd. Boy, if you look at the people that are surrounding him at some of these rallies, they look like they're 10 years old. But that demographic doesn't show up to vote. They do everything but actually go in and pull the lever, which is kind of interesting. Yeah.
But he's winning in these states in the primary.
Yeah. I don't know.
Bill now.
The scary thing to me is that what it reflects about their lack of understanding of what is the fundamental principle of our country, what's made our country great, to flock to this self-avowed socialist who has no decent idea to create any kind of business or free enterprise or private capital at all. He just wants the government to take over everything. It's really scary that young people would even listen to that.
Well, they can relate to him because weren't you telling me that he never had a job and was actually on welfare before
wasn't he on welfare when he first started his career? He's never had a real job.
Well, he's an expert
he
on
no idea.
Social programs. You've been there.
And so... In some ways, I think it's incumbent on us to do a better job of explaining to these young people how the United States has gotten to be where it is and what the United States can offer them. And it's not socialism, and it's not the government telling us what to do about everything, and the 80,000 pages of regulations that the Obama administration's put in place. It's about empowering people to achieve their full potential.
Yeah, and then you have the other ones. Shoot, I have a niece graduating from Texas Christian with a double major in 3 years. I've got a nephew who's graduating graduated with a double major in 4. They're getting in, out. I've got another one graduated from Westmont a couple of years ago. He's down in L.A., started his own business. He's got some swank apartment down there. He's 20. And got an apartment for his brother, and so they're going to go into business there. And the other brother is in China making a deal with some manufacturer on a clothing line that he created for the junior colleges. He's 19, and I'm thinking these guys are going to run the world one day.
Well, they're out there. I mean, that's the thing is there are young folks out there that understand the system. They're smart. And
they're motivated.
They're motivated. You know, I think so many of the young folks now
have... Their parents aren't idiots either, so that helps.
That's a big part of it. I think they grew up, everything was handed to them, and now they have to go out and make it on their own, and they're looking for somebody to hand it to them. And it isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen.
What do you see as the biggest change that'll... I mean, if you had to, like, be a prognosticator, and you were just going to say, okay, Trump's president next week, what do you think changes first?
I think we need to see a little more of how he fleshes out what he's for. But if he did what he said, I think he would focus on the free trade stuff and figuring out how to make sure that the wages and incomes grow. If he does that, then he's going to go back to some of these fundamental policies of changing welfare, changing food stamps, changing the tax code, getting rid of regulations that Obama's put in place, to restore America to kind of a Reagan-esque time when people could start businesses and flourish and raise their families. That's what I hope he does.
Do you really think it would take that much to turn it around? I mean, just with the things that you just mentioned there, if somebody could come in and do that in a four-year period of time, do you think that's possible with as messed up as it is right now?
Yeah, Reagan did it. Reagan came in and said everything Jimmy Carter did was wrong, except deregulating the airlines. And he cut taxes, he cut regulations, he faced down the air traffic controllers, which was a warning shot across the bow to every other union. There's so many things that Obama's done by executive order that the new president, if he's a Republican, can stop right away, like and appoint a good NLRB and stop the increased easiness to get union elections and all that kind of stuff. Stop the executive orders about wage and hour changes, you know, when someone's called a manager versus an hourly worker for overtime. I mean, there's so many things all through the system that Obama's done by executive order that just make it more costly to run a business.
And the next president, as far as these executive orders go, he has every right and ability to reverse those executive orders, doesn't he?
Yeah, if we get a Republican in there, he'll do it. I think Trump would do it. I mean, how about this ridiculous one that if in the event of a 100-year flood, water from somewhere could communicate with a navigable piece of water, then the place where that water would be coming from in the event of a 100-year flood is considered a navigable waterway. So that means every farmer's tank and pond could considerably, if it's anywhere near a river, it becomes a navigable waterway. You could just stop that first afternoon.
Yeah, and that is that's a great example of a ridiculous law.
Oh, yeah. Deal with that all the time.
More control. Less, you know, less people on the land. It gets back to that whole thing. That's what they're doing. No, we need somebody that can go in and will go in and reverse. If he just reversed some of these executive orders, boy, what a difference that would make pretty quickly.
Which is why I don't understand why someone's saying I'd rather have Hillary Clinton than him.
Oh, yeah, because she'll do it, won't she?
She won't reverse any. Yeah, right.
Not one.
She'll get right on that.
She'll amp them up.
She will put on her orange Mao jacket and, uh-huh, and bust out her pen and go make that.
That's right.
Yeah, no, not happen. Well, just the fact that they trashed the White House and broke things and stole things when they left last time should,
the good news is
preclude
her if she's elected, maybe she'll bring some of that stuff back.
Oh, there you go. Know? Well, I didn't think of
redecorate.
That.
Redecorate.
What was I thinking?
Yeah, re-gift it.
Oh, it's
they have a track record of crookedness and corruption and
I think with
that record,
my mom actually
said she has a lot of experience. I was like, Mom, what?
But see, I think that a lot of that stuff now is fair game for Trump. Now that he can focus on her and not 16 other candidates, he can turn his guns on her. And I heard the other day that they said that it could really get heated up now that. Trump can turn his guns on Hillary.
Well, and don't forget, there's that other little piece of the puzzle that just for the heck of it, if she was to be the nominee, which of course she will be, if they indicted her after that, they could parachute in somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of a bit of a specter because I fear that they might parachute Biden in.
Yep.
And
Uncle
Joe. He would be a much more rational candidate than she is.
Right. Well, he didn't have to. We had somebody on a few months ago that lined us out on the rules and how that would actually happen. If they indicted her and she was taken out of the race prior to being the nominee, then they get Bernie because he's the only guy qualified in all 50 states. But if they wait till after she's the nominee, she falls through the trapdoor, then
they can put anybody in there.
They can put anybody in there.
Right. And I think they're waiting Bernie out. And so when Bernie says, I'm fighting to the last vote, he's saying, I'm going to make it real hard on you guys to dump me.
Yeah, yeah. Don't try to break up with me. I'll break up with you first.
Well, it didn't work with Kasich, so I don't know.
Oh, God, yeah. That guy.
Yeah, he was a diehard, wasn't he?
Jeez Louise.
He hung in there just long enough maybe to become VP. Who knows?
The water in Ohio is just laced with something. We have to take one more really quick break here before the top of the hour. We're chatting with Ambassador Francis Rumi, who has joined us on Mother's Day. Thank you so much. Take a little time out from the family. You can find out all his information online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. You gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices. Sit on the scene. Giving up all around me. Bases full of pain.
All right, Mr. Ambassador, what did we, what didn't we cover? We have like 3 minutes.
Let's get back on track here.
No, I mean, you know, you have a different vantage point and a different history, obviously, than we do. So, you know, you've been in an administration before that was a really big change from, were you there the first 4 years?
First 4 years, I did a lot of things for George Bush, but I wasn't in a full-time post.
Okay.
I got to do several very discreet missions for him in Central America and Latin America, and was involved in several things that he did there.
Cool. So when you start out in an administration that's following up on one that, you know, that folks on our side of the line think is a disaster, is it just like all hands on deck?
Sure. I mean, you know, you come in with a policy agenda that you want to try to accomplish and change things. And you're plugging holes in the dike, you know, and it's going to be this way now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hopefully we'll get a Republican in there. I guess it's going to be Donald Trump. And we need to start with all these executive orders and then start to work through the National Labor Relations Board and the potential judicial appointments and all the other things. I mean, I wonder what people are thinking. They're talking about Hillary versus him. I just have real trouble getting my arms around thinking that she would be any way better than him, in terms of these fundamental lifestyle changing appointments and direction of the government.
Yeah. Cause well, just the Supreme Court alone should.
Yeah.
Well, then there are a lot of people who think that, you know, he might be just like her and that he's masquerading as a Republican. There's that whole thing, which is a total can of worms. But if he does what he says, we might be able to right the ship, huh?
Yeah, so all you guys out there, if you want to use the ladies' room, you better get on it, because that might be going away, too.
We chatted about the bathroom bill last week. Good Lord, it never ends.
It doesn't end.
Well, Ambassador Rooney, we really appreciate you spending some of your afternoon with us. And hope you have a super day, and come back and give us your thoughts.
Oh, I think, yeah, as this heats up, we definitely got to have you back.
Yeah, we need your insight. You've done this before.
I hope you all have a great Mother's Day, and appreciate the chance to be on your show again. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks a ton. All right, folks, you ought to send this interview to your friends. It was kind of fun. Gives you something to think about. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
We've kind of got that beginning all figured out now, don't we? You can find everything about us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Got archives for all our shows back to 2010 or something. Really,
May of 1941.
Really a long time ago. And so lots of good archives, lots of good information on the pages. We don't just archive the sound file. We put book links and article links and all the things about our guests on there, along with contact information. If you'd like to get those folks on different programs and don't know how to get a hold of them, you can always either call or email, and all our information is online.
Yeah. If you have some ideas on guests,
yes.
Yeah, let us know.
And we're always cool with sponsorship. So
yeah,
if
we'll let you know if it's a bad idea or not.
We'll put you in charge of that.
Yeah. Do that.
Hatchet Man. We air live on the West Coast, Pacific time here in Northern California, Sundays from noon to 2. And we're currently airing on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network in the Philadelphia and Jersey Shore area on station WNJC 1360. And that is from Saturdays from 2:30 to 4. They put us on there without commercials so they can squeeze us into an hour and a half. There you go. That's all the news that's fit to print. And moving on with our second guest this program, we have Lawrence Schonbrunn. He is a nationally recognized authority on the issue of reasonableness of attorney's fees, the awards and class actions. So this is a topic we know nothing about.
I thought the more you paid, the better chance you had of winning.
Yeah. Well, we've all gotten a check from the class action lawsuit for like 78 cents or whatever. Mm-hmm. You get those postcards in the mail and fill it out. Yeah. And that's all
and then
we know.
Your winnings come in. You're a happy camper.
You're it.
Yeah.
He's been on the Stossel program and 60 Minutes and testified before Congress, I guess, bunches of times, and Wall Street Journal, New York Times. So he's been all over that place. So, Mr. Schonbrunn, what are you going to educate us with today? It's one case, right? One really big case that's pending?
Well, it's one case, but it has national implications.
Yes.
Particularly, I was just reading in the paper, if you've heard about the this new National Consumer Protection Agency, a recent front-page story in the Times, that now they're going to have legislation permitting class action lawsuits against banks and financial institutions. So this has a national impact. My case covers two issues: how attorneys' fees are calculated in class actions, the process. In California right now, under the law as I read it, the fee has to be based on the work the lawyers do on the case. And that's a very different method of compensation from taking a fixed percentage of the settlement, which is what's done in a common, you know, PI case, personal injury case. What's happening with percentages is that they provide excessive hourly fee awards to the attorneys. In my case, the lead attorneys got $1,600 an hour for each hour they worked
Holy
on the
cow.
Case. And we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. So that's one issue. The second issue is unique to class actions, and that is when a class action settles, a pot of money is obtained for the class, and then the lawyers want to take their fee out of that pot. So that pot of money is the class's recovery. They are now antagonistic toward the class. They want to reduce the class's recovery and get more fees for themselves. And the system abandons representation for class members. There's no lawyer in an adversarial position to the lawyers trying to protect the class's recovery from the lawyer's fee request.
Which is why we get a check for 78 cents at the end.
Right, but how is that any different than when you hire a lawyer and he comes on for a contingent fee? He takes his money after you win. He gets nothing if you lose. How is that different with the class action?
It's different in two ways. The first way it's different is that you're quite right, that you hire an attorney, you sign a retainer agreement, and you agree to pay the attorney a certain amount of money. In a class action, the overwhelming majority of the class members know nothing about the lawsuit. They didn't give the lawyer permission to do anything. They haven't agreed to any sum of money. And that's why there's this hearing procedure where the class members get the opportunity to comment on the settlement and the fee request.
So the lawyers then are the ones that initiate the suit, and then they bring in clients to join it.
All they need is one person.
Oh.
No, they initiate the suit with one person.
Okay.
What makes the class action so deleterious and so effective is that you could have every person in the class against the idea of the suit, and just one person, perhaps that the lawyer selected or the person who went to the lawyer, who in whose name the suit is brought, and the way the system functions, if you don't like the suit, you what's called opt out. You have the opportunity to opt out.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Otherwise, you're automatically opted in.
Exactly. And that's what gives the lawyers the pressure to force the defendants to settle. And that's another reason why the class action suit is so different from an individual's lawsuit, because there's an incredible pressure on defendants to settle, because inertia is such that most people are not going to opt out. They're not going to pay any attention to it. So you have thousands, tens of thousands, even millions of plaintiffs involved. So a company cannot run the risk of litigating a suit with so many people involved, so they settle.
Sure, and all you got was a little junk mail postcard to an address that may or may not be current.
Right.
And you may or may not have read it.
Basically get the scraps. They take their huge fees off the top, and then what's ever left over, you might get a quarter, you might get $100.
I have. But, I mean, we've all gotten those checks for less than a buck.
And there are two answers that they give to that. First of all, they say that, it doesn't make a difference how much money you're getting. We're deterring defendants from doing bad things in the future because they're paying us a lot of money in fees, and maybe the settlement costs them. So that's going to deter companies from doing bad things in the future.
Okay. And so how much of that do you think is true?
Well, interestingly enough, I think in principle it isn't true, for the fact that these cases never settle for the amount of money that the lawyers claim the class has been damaged. Now, in the securities class actions, they claim damages of, let's say, $1, and the class settles for 5 cents to 10 cents on the dollar before the lawyer's fees come out. So if that's indeed the case, if someone were cheating, why would they care if they're going to get to keep 90 cents of the dollar that they cheated you on? How is giving up 5 to 10 cents on that dollar a deterrent? I mean, I could argue just the opposite. It would encourage dishonest businesses to keep doing it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you've been fighting this a long time.
Right? I have, too long. One of the reasons is because you're up against all the powers that be. The judges are very happy with these cases. Defendants' lawyers are being employed. Plaintiffs' lawyers, of course, are being employed. And the defendants, they want to settle. They just say they treat it, legal expenses are like rent or electricity or hot water. It's just a business expense, so get out of the suit and let somebody else worry about it.
So if you are, say you get a card in the mail, join this class action, we're going to make millions of dollars. You sign in, you're part of the class action, and then down the road you realize, or maybe you really were injured or suffered some sort of issue with that particular case, can you go back then and and open another lawsuit for just yourself, or have you pretty much signed your?
Well, I mean, typically you don't have to sign in. You don't ask. You're a member unless you specifically opt out. And if you don't opt out, you're bound by the judgment. The system does allow you, when you get that notice, if you say, I want to sue on my own, okay, then you can opt out, and if you can find a lawyer, you sue on your own. Otherwise, you're bound by the judgment. Hmm. If we got a minute, I think I can describe to you what the issue is here.
Yeah.
And the issue is...
How about this? Lawrence, let's take a really quick break.
Okay.
And then we'll come right back. We have to take breaks at like the quarter hour so it gives you like a little mental place to go. And then make a tiny note. Apparently there's a giant food recall going on that I wasn't aware of. And we have someone in our chat room who wants to know if food recalls can be class action. So we've got a few things to chat about and plenty of time to do it. We're here with Lawrence Schonbrunn. You guys are going to enjoy this. This is interesting stuff that we have not covered before. We're out in a realm we've not covered. Class action lawsuits. This is We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart to
give
a damn, but hey.
I'll keep
it with my foot. You say you haven't been the same since you had your little crack, but you might feel better if they gave you some cash. The more I think about it, old Billy was right. Let's kill all the loggers, kill them tonight. You don't want to work, you want to live like a king, but the big bad world doesn't owe you a thing. Get over it. Get over it.
Don't know how to get over it anymore. It's been wrong.
So that's the No More Class Action Lawsuit song, apparently. Get over it. Oh, my gosh. We forgot to warn Lawrence that there is goofing around on this show.
Oh, that's okay. I'm a goofy guy.
Okay, good. We talk about serious topics, but if we actually did them straight, we'd have blood
pressing.
We'd have blood pressure problems, and people would just be freaking out. So we got to mess around a little. Okay, so you were going to give us a kind of a snazzy overview.
Sort of, we're on the horns of a dilemma. The way this issue is being fought in the general public, one side talks about the evil banks who are taking advantage of customers left and right. The other side talks about evil class action lawyers who are bringing irresponsible lawsuits that get class members nothing but get them large fees.
Mm.
And each of them is claiming to be acting on behalf of the consumers. The problem is that there are two problems here. One is the guilty banks who are taking advantage of customers. The others are the guilty lawyers who are taking advantage of both the legal system and their client to get these enormous fees. So someone has to intercede and sort of roll back both evils, but the way it's portrayed in the media is you sort of take sides either with, quote, business, close quote, against the evil lawyers, or you take sides with the lawyers against the evil corporations. But the bottom line is we, the consumers, suffer in both cases.
Yeah, there's no win for us.
Yeah, that's right. It's just money out of our pockets, and it's lots of money out of our pockets. And, and now Americans are getting – when this started, Americans weren't, as poor as they are now. Now, they're destroying the middle class. Prices are going up. People don't have enough money. So now this what was a luxury before is no longer luxury. It's an expensive process that's just too expensive for America, and they've got to figure out more efficient ways to do it, but the special interests don't want to figure out those ways. They want to keep draining us of money.
Yeah, so you've looked at this for I mean, a number of years.
Yeah.
And so I guess the obvious question is, how much pressure do you get from the legal community to quit looking at this?
Well, unfortunately, because I'm such a minority, it doesn't make a difference. I would describe myself as an annoyance in individual cases, but the ability to get this word out, which is why I'm thankful to be able to talk on your show. It's very difficult to get this word out. No one's interested. You have the people aligned with the business interests. They're not so interested. People aligned with the left and lawyers. So it's very difficult to get this message out to the general public.
You know, and you would think the general public, well, I guess the venue would be hard, but I was going to say the message, most people, especially if you have an issue with, you know, a chemical company or, you know, there are some huge issues that happen that they really do need someone to represent them. They aren't all just, you know, frivolous things.
Yes, but the problem is they've set up, I mean, these people are very clever. They've set up this ingenious system that it's very difficult to penetrate. And as long, it's intricate, it's, you know, let's say the common man, the common citizen, has so many things and so many entertainments to be involved with, they're not going to sort of dig down to figure out what the real issues are here.
Yeah, that's true. And so if people, if we were going to try to make a difference, if we were going to do something about this, does this have to be done at the legislative level, or do attorneys have to agree to it? How do you fix it?
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of levels, but I mean, one thing I can say is that class members, they get these notices rather than throw it away, although that's the easiest thing to do. If you read the notice, you see that you have a right to either send a letter to the judge, like sending a letter to your congressman. But you can send a letter to the judge, or you can go into court. And, you know, unfortunately, it's intimidating to do the latter. But to go in there as a common citizen and to say, look, I'm fed up with this. I don't like the fact that I'm getting a coupon to get $5 off a product I don't want to buy. And I don't like the fact that these lawyers are making, you know, in my case, $1,600 an hour for thousands of hours claimed to get me this coupon. And, I mean, again, what effect that'll have, I can't exactly say, but right now it's really not being done at all.
Yeah, because I haven't, until I read the article that Stephen sent me, I didn't know this was actually happening. So I think you're actually kind of right. People don't know. However, we have gotten those coupons, and that is irritating. They
yes.
come kind of out of the blue, and you're like, wait a second, what?
Yeah, but it's, you know, the thing is it's done behind, you know, it's not, I was going to say behind closed doors, but it's done in these courtrooms where it's the plaintiff's lawyers, the defendant's lawyers, the judge, and everyone's looking out to protect his own interest. The judge typically wants to get the case off the docket, okay? The plaintiff's lawyers want to get their legal fees. The defendant wants to get this case over with the lowest liability, and what's the easiest thing he can give away is coupons to buy more of his product. So as long as the judge is willing to say, okay, you know, the famous Marie Antoinette, let them eat coupons. So as long as the judge is willing to say, okay, give them coupons and give the lawyers millions of dollars in cash, that's the way this system runs. It's just, you know, it's just like maybe you can look at construction payoffs. You know, a lot of politics is run on money given behind the scenes. This is sort of more public, but this is the way the people in charge run things to benefit themselves at our expense.
Yeah, and so the big food recall that I guess a lot of these foods are in bunches of different stores, you know, Costco, Safeway,
Costco,
stuff like that.
Costco, I think, is one of the biggies right now. It's getting all the attention.
Which one is that?
It's a big food recall. I guess a lot of the food's frozen.
A lot of the frozen food from Costco now is being recalled because it has Listeria or something in it.
Oh,
Listeria. Listeria is actually
flowers.
Oh,
that's a bush. Yeah, that's a bush.
That tastes a little different.
Don't try to
you'd pick up on that right
don't
away.
Don't try to sue them over the purple flowers.
Yeah. Yeah, that somebody in the chat was saying it's up to 360 products now that are being recalled because people are getting sick, and I guess a couple people have died. So,
oh God,
yeah. So I'm sure that'll be landing in some class action suit.
Without question. I mean, everything is a class action
suit
now.
Oh, sure.
Except for really good stuff that ought to happen, like, you know, VA medical, some of those kinds
right.
of things. You know, why is it we can't claw that up to a class action issue?
Because pot stickers are way more important than that.
Right. And the other thing, of course, is suing the government. When the government is the defendant,
yeah.
okay, then a whole lot of other priorities come into play. It's much easier to sue a large multinational or private company than it is to sue the government. There's sort of more money at the end of the line. So there's a favoritism towards suing individual companies.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is, let's face it, if you are harmed in some way by a corporation and you know, some grievous thing happened to you, you're going to go out and get a lawyer and there's going to be a lawsuit. But so many people, like you were just saying, don't have time for that, and you know they're just going to. They would normally just let it go,
right?
And but now there's a class action suit. Oh, I can make some money, you know. So,
well, no, it's not so. I mean, they don't make money from the class action suit. I mean, oftentimes the lawyer finds the client. The lawyer hears about something, saying, "Oh, we could sue and get some money." So they find the client.
Oh, they kind of ambulance chase it, huh?
Yes, it's permitted. I mean, the whole focus, ambulance chasing, you know, in the good old days, lawsuits were frowned upon as creating civil discord, and not being promoted. That's all changed. Now lawyers advertise, and there's a whole different attitude that lawsuits bring justice. But what has happened is an interesting, what can I say, things have been turned upside down. The notion of the class action, or the primary notion, and you just talked about it, typically in life, you know, incidents occurs that just, number one, aren't worth fighting about. It's
right.
$1 or $2 or $3 of something you bought and it fell apart in a second. Or, one of the thing falls apart very quickly. Or you can't find a lawyer for it. Maybe it's a $20 problem, but no lawyer's going to sue for a $20 problem. So the idea was, let's put all these small suits together, make them viable for a lawyer, and then he sues, so we're going to correct the problems. What's been turned upside down is, in the fee situation, it's the lawyers now who have co-opted this problem. So because they're taking $1, $2, or $3 or $10, whatever it is, extra from the clients out of the fee, okay, because this problem now exists in the court system, not in the marketplace,
right.
It's kind of immune. It's not within the marketplace. So the lawyers have basically taken this problem that, you know, consumers are being taken advantage of for $1, $2, or $3, and now they do it.
Sure. You know, one way I think you could probably solve that was when they want to have a class action lawsuit. Yeah, you can maybe win some money if you're part of the suit. But if they lose, then you have to pay some more money.
Loser pays.
Yeah, loser pays. So if that were the case, I think you'd see a lot fewer class action suits because really, it wasn't worth suing over to start with.
I think you're right, but being in the system as I have, you know, every answer has its own problems. I mean, I don't know what the history of loser pays is, for example, in the UK. I don't even know exactly how successful it's been. But one thing I can say is that I don't know that the courts would be so eager, depending on who the lawyers who were brought the suit, of branding it, let's say, frivolous and saying the lawyers have to pay. I mean, I don't think that would be done so easily because there is kind of a brotherhood, brethren notion there, and I think it would only be in the extreme cases and probably the so-called reputable plaintiff's lawyers wouldn't have that, wouldn't be required to pay for the suit.
No, now you're getting into the whole tort reform thing, and
yes.
You know how tough that would be to to push forward. I mean, that's a big lobby.
Nobody
there.
Wants to touch that.
Well, I can tell you that I used, you know, let's say when I first started this in my own mind, I thought this will only change when there's an economic disaster. That's when people are going to come to their senses. And then there was 2008, 2009. So now I've changed my attitude. There has to be an economic catastrophe. And then something will change.
It's really unfortunate that that has to happen. We've got to take a really quick break. We're here with Lawrence Schonbrunn. A battle is being waged now in the California Supreme Court over how much money courts should pay attorneys from class action settlements. But this is going to have national implications for those of you who are not in California. Yet again, we're coming for your wallet, too. Caveat with every show we have. WePeopleRadio.us. Well, Lawrence, if you need a theme song for court, that's a contender.
That's the Sue Me, Sue You Blues. Thank you for finding that.
Who is that, Bob?
That's George Harrison. He wrote that shortly after the Beatles broke up when he was reflecting on all of the legal issues that accompanied that breakup.
Oh, boy.
Right.
He certainly had the Sue Me, Sue You Blues at that time. So when does this case go forward?
This case is I just got word that the California Supreme Court on May 27th, it's a Friday, is going to take oral arguments, the first argument on the calendar, and it's actually being broadcast on the World Wide Web. So actually people can watch it if they want to, but it should be there have been 5 amicus briefs that have been filed. In other words, I filed this petition against the class counsel in this particular case, but because it's an issue that extends beyond this case, but to, as you've mentioned, to all attorneys fee award and class action common fund recoveries. So there have been 5 other amicus. One of the amici is a group of 8 nationally prominent law professors who have been hired by one of a class action law firm to opine to the court about what it should do. And one of the ramifications of these class actions is that the law professorate in the country has been co-opted by these plaintiffs' lawyers because they have loads of money to spend. And what they do is they hire law professors, and they don't disclose how much they pay them, but I believe they can earn in one case a third or 20% of their, maybe more, of their entire yearly salary.
Yikes.
By filing a declaration in a case. And in my case, these, you know, from Harvard and Columbia and NYU, I'm not sure, University of Chicago, Stanford, I think, one professor. So they get these professors from prominent law schools to basically opine their line, in this case, about percentages and why it's necessary to give a percentage recovery to the lawyers and not make them earn a fee based on what they've done in the case.
Well, if they're pulling in, you know, $1,600 an hour with a zillion hours on the case, hey,
yeah.
Paying some law professors is a snap.
Yes, and the shocking thing is that my understanding is that $1,600 an hour, again, for thousands and thousands of hours of work, is I won't say it's low, but the figures can go a lot higher. $2,300 an hour, $3,200 an hour. It's in fact the poster child for this. If you remember the tobacco cases.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So the law firm that has entered these experts in this case was trying to get a fee in the state of Massachusetts, and the hourly rate they had received, the state paid them a certain amount of money, didn't want to pay them more, $7,700 an hour.
And these were the witnesses or the attorneys?
Attorneys.
Yeah.
So it's got to be thousands, tens of thousands of hours, $7,700 an hour. And they came into court complaining they wanted to get the equivalent of $21,000 an hour. So you're talking about, you know, almost obscene amounts of money when you think about the general population, and they're fighting now to get $15 or $20 hourly wage. And these are the kind of hourly wages these lawyers can get. And that's why they don't want to do it on an hourly basis. They would much rather have it on a straight percentage, so no one ever knows how much they've made an hour, because that issue is not relevant.
Right.
It's not calculated that way.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be totally based on the outcome.
So what do you think?
Exactly, a percentage of the outcome.
What do you think your odds are, or how do you see this shaping up?
Yeah, well, I don't know how pessimistic
I've been so far. Don't jinx the thing,
but a law professor friend of mine said, Larry, I'd bet on Don Quixote before I'd bet on you.
Well, he sounds like somebody you shouldn't call back. I mean, put him, you should unfriend him, as they say.
But, I mean, realistically, you know, who's on, I don't have thousands of consumers coming into court, sitting in the courtroom saying, you know, we demand justice. I mean, that's why this is so subtle, and this is why it's so all-pervasive. So I've got the plaintiff's lawyers against me. I've got the defense lawyers against me, in the sense that once they give the sum of money up to the class, they don't care how it's divided. It's the gross amount of the settlement that they're concerned about. How the lawyer and the client divide it is not an issue for them. And what I'm asking for, in the sense that I'm asking for it to be, the fee to be calculated based on, you know, who did what work, when and for how long, that's more difficult for the court to oversee than would be a third of whatever the settlement was.
Sure. Make it cut and dry.
Pardon?
Just be cut and dry then.
Yes, exactly.
Don't worry about keeping every receipt for every phone call and every messenger sent across the street and all that. Yeah.
So if you look at it that way, it almost seems hopeless. But I, at least, you know, I'm putting up the good fight and just being able to. I think, you know, a lot of this is that most people don't know what's going on. So to the extent I can talk on the radio and tell people what's going on, maybe, you know, their sense of justice sort of is really.
Well, you know, it's pretty. I mean, I think you'd have trouble finding somebody who hadn't ever, you know, received, you know, one of the postcards or a letter. You know, there's been a class action, and sometimes they come with just a ton of paper, and gives you this whole case, and you're thinking, I don't think I even, you know, shopped at that store, or did you do this between this date or this date? And I'm thinking, gosh, who remembers that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the opt-in thing. The fact that you have to actually opt out, that you're automatically opted in, that explains that.
Yes. And that could change it drastically. If these cases were opt-in rather than opt-out, it would change the whole dynamic of this situation. And although they did talk about that early on, you know, it would be a major change in the way these cases are litigated, and they're not ready to do that yet. But you're quite right. It's a very good point. If they changed it so that if they sent you out the letter and they said, if you want to be in this case, please send it back, but then what would happen? There'd be, you know, there'd be fewer settlements because there'd be fewer plaintiffs. There'd be more litigation, and the whole system, you know, is, the system is happy with the way it is now. Defendants get out of their liability. Plaintiffs get a whole lot. The plaintiff's lawyers get a ton of money, and the judge gets rid of a case quickly. So everyone who's directly involved benefits it from the way it is, except we, the general public, who are paying for this.
Yeah, no kidding. Huh. And so what about things like the government? What about things like the VA or medical type stuff at the government level? How do you fix if you're not a, you
how
know,
could this be? How will it be fixed?
Yeah. How could you solve it? You know, if you can't do a class action type of thing, does every single person have to try to run up that hill alone?
No. But what you said, do it as an opt in.
Yeah.
Send all the notices out so when you get the thing in the mail. It doesn't, you, if you think you weren't in this, you didn't shop during this time period.
Right, okay.
Or you think, oh, you don't care about this suit, or when you see the lawyers asking for $40 million, you say, I'm not going to give this lawyer $40 million, and then you just don't send the card back. So the lawsuit continues, but you're not a part of it.
Yeah.
That would change the whole dynamic. But again, see, everyone involved has learned to adjust to the status quo, and that would be a major change.
That'd be huge. What qualifies as a class action anyway? Is it a threshold amount of people?
Well, it's more or less. I mean, it's typically that's not an issue. I don't know if the legal number is 40. I don't know that there's a fixed number, but,
is it adult? Like, you know, is it a? Because I would think it would have to have some sort of a mix of the amount of injury, like the dollar value, and then the number of people. Seem like
it's not the dollar value.
No,
because these. Remember, one of the rationales for this was, you know, if you steal a dollar from a million people, you've got $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the amount. Although I'm guessing.
That's Bernie. You know, huh?
It's not the amount. It's more the number of people.
Huh.
So let me ask you this. You know, we've been hearing a lot in the news lately about this Volkswagen case.
Right.
I'm sure there's going to be a class action if there isn't already. How would people get – would they be better off going as an individual on a deal like that? And because that's going to involve – I don't know if it involves a foreign company because I'm sure there's Volkswagen of America that would have to pay the bill. But would they be better off on a class action on a deal? Because that's big numbers. That's huge.
Well, I think, you know, the problem is there is a need for this kind of litigation.
Right.
The problem is the people involved are abusing it to their own benefit and to the detriment of class members and the general public. The need is there. That's part of the reason why it's gone on as long as it has. People hear class action. They think, oh, that's good. They hear Volkswagen being sued, you know, a corporation, and then they were cheating on the registration of the exhaust. But what about all the cheating that's going on in the class action system? All the excessive fees, the, you know, unnecessary work. The cheating that goes on in the courtroom is not a part of the process. It's only the cheating that goes on in the marketplace.
Hmm.
So to answer your specific question, no, it's individuals can't sue. The problem, one of the problems is, you know how many lawsuits were filed against Volkswagen? 500. 500.
Yeah.
So you're talking about thousands of lawyers are just waiting for the chance to stick their claws into this defendant, like the BP case.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the, you know, and again, these are harms. No question, these are harms. The society just has a very imperfect way of resolving these that work to the benefit of the lawyers and to the detriment of the general public. That's the problem.
Hmm. Jeez Louise. We've got to take one last quick break, and we're going to come back with Lawrence Schonbrunn. Talking about class action lawsuits and all that. It's a new topic for us. It's kind of interesting and something that I think most of us, unless we get one of those postcards in the mail, we just don't think about it. So we appreciate all this fun information. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Oh, this is a good song for this, Bob. Bob hits another home run. Crowd goes wild.
Nothing from nothing. Have something if you want to be with me. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You gotta have something if you want to be with me. Yeah. I'm not trying to be your hero, 'cause that zero is too cold for me. That minus is too low to see. Yeah. I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need.
Oh, Bob, who is that?
Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we
it's
sue.
Very nice
we
of you
sue.
To find a very appropriate
song. That's Dave Frischberg.
Well, I should have known that. Not.
Are you going to end this program with lawyers, guns, and money?
Don't give him any ideas.
Oh, hey, if you've got requests, we do them. Oh, Bob always tailors our stuff. We've even got a special Larry. I don't know if you still have that queued up. Our other friend that's an attorney who comes on about a lot of our land use issues. He is from New York, and his name is Lawrence as well.
Oh.
Lawrence Kogan. So we have lawyers named Lawrence on this show.
Well, I'm following in a proud tradition.
Exactly, but we only have that one song that's about Bernie, which, you know, it's just, but we, you know, it's good enough.
Well, there's a song. Do you know the song "Lawyers, Guns, and Money"?
Yes, Warren Zevon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Of course, you would know that, Bob. See, that's why we're not allowed to touch any of the buttons, Bill, and I sit over here on the dopey side. We just have little laptops. Yeah. See, Bob has Bob's got all the buttons, and he's in charge of all
Werewolves
that stuff.
Werewolves of London.
Oh, did he sing that too?
Same guy. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm the odd man out here. I'm the only one who doesn't know.
Yeah, you're not old enough.
maybe I need to file a class action, huh?
Uh-huh. There you go. Yeah, keep flapping your mouth.
Yep,
there,
yep. You just wise up.
Yep.
So Lawrence, what don't we know at this point?
I appreciate the ability. I think I've covered, you know, most of the issues. There is one other issue I could talk to your listeners about that's very important that I know that no one knows about, and that is private judging.
What?
You know about this, that no. Our courts are being eviscerated isn't the right word, but judges, and I think particularly the better ones, the more talented ones, are leaving the public court system and becoming involved in these private judicial panels. The most famous one is called JAMS, Judicial Arbitration and Mediation Services. And what happens is, because of the problems with the public court system, which we don't have to get into right now, but companies are opting to use private judges.
And that doesn't sound like a good idea.
No. And probably the biggest problem from my perspective is that it makes the public system kind of a minor league. So you're there in the public system. You're there to show off your brilliance and your skills and your, you know, Solomonic wisdom to big deal plaintiff's lawyers and defendant's lawyers. And then you leave the public system, join the private system, and then you're hired to mediate cases. So I will put this question to you. How successful do you think a judge would be in being hired after he retired from the private system if he gave a serious eye, scrutinized, if he scrutinized the lawyer's fees and cut down the excessive fees the lawyers were seeking in these cases? What chance do you think he'd have a success? I mean, to ask the question is to answer it. So you're getting a circumstance where the judges in the public system are now affected by what happens later when they become private judges, and suddenly their public decisions can have a perspective of how is it going to look when I become a private judge.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that explains some stuff.
Pardon?
That kind of explains a few things.
Yeah, it does. It is wow.
I mean, not all the time. I mean, it's like people say all lawyers are crooked. I mean, there's never all or none. I mean, that's silly. So there are always going to be good judges. But, boy, that kind of holds out a lot of temptation there.
People don't ever think about that either.
No. Most people don't know about it.
Nope.
And for reasons I'm not exactly clear about, the press is not interested in talking about an issue like this. And I don't know exactly why, but the press...
Because they're busy listening to themselves talk, which is why we try to do as little as possible.
Okay. But that's a real kind of problem that's really below everyone's radar.
When did that start? When did we start doing that?
Probably about 20 years ago. You know, the public courts, you can imagine, the courts are horribly, they've got so many cases,
yeah,
and the personnel in the court system is not so good. The people, you run into are, how can I say, you know, it's not the upper crust. So the public court system is not a place where, unless you're dedicated, there are. I've not met judges who are very dedicated, very serious. But most of them, like anybody else, are willing to go along to get along and want to succeed, want to make more money, want to ingratiate themselves to their colleagues.
Yeah, it's not great.
So,
well, Lawrence, we'd be happy to have you come back on and talk to us about what happens.
I'll be happy to. When the case gets decided, we can go over it, and I appreciate an hour to talk about it.
Yeah, fabulous.
Thank you for
coming on. Court's opinion.
Well, here come lawyers, guns, and money for you.
Thank you.
Lawrence Schombrin, thank you for coming on with us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You've been listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. And lawyers, guns, and money.